Medicine has become a lot more scientific in the past century, but decisions can still be as much art as science, especially when they involve the brain and the nervous system. NPR's John Hamilton brings us the story of one medical decision. It begins in a house in Cohasset, Massachusetts.
Bob Smithson lives here with his wife, Pat.
We were having dinner with some very good friends. One of our friends happened to be a doctor, and he said, "Why are you dropping your head, Bob?"
Bob, who is 79, had no idea why his head was lolling forward, neither did his doctor friend. And Bob's wife, Pat, says before long, other symptoms appeared.
The next day, he couldn't swallow.
And he had double vision. So Bob went to his primary care doctor, who called a neurologist.
And the neurologist said, "I think he's got a very rare sickness."
Myasthenia gravis, a disease that can leave muscles dangerously weak. It occurs when the body's immune system attacks the connections between nerve and muscle. Doctors treat myasthenia with drugs that improve the transmission of nerve impulses and suppress the immune system. Bob's neurologist referred him to Alan Roper, an expert on myasthenia at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. Roper says he knew Bob might be headed for trouble.
Myasthenia is known to be a very fickle disease. It can get bad very quickly. It has a substantial mortality rate, particularly in an individual his age.
Roper started Bob on several medications, but his patient's muscles continued to get weaker.
He was spending more and more of the day holding his head up by putting his arm under his chin or using a collar. And to me, that was enough to say, you need to be in the hospital because you're on the brink of decompensating.
A nice way of saying his body was barely able to function without help. Pat was spending her days at the hospital and sleeping at a Holiday Inn. Late one night, she got a call. Bob was being moved to the intensive care unit and wanted to see her. She took a cab back to the hospital.
I sat in a chair and put my arms around his legs, and we sort of stayed till the morning.
Pretty soon, Bob was heavily sedated and full of tubes. One delivered air to his lungs, another sent food to his stomach.
He can't talk now. He can't write. I thought, well, if it was me, I'm sure Bob would be right there.
More than a week passed, and Roper realized that his patient had arrived at a critical juncture.
He was beginning to get a pneumonia, which is common from being intubated and on the ventilator, and was really in the kind of spiral that, as clinicians, is very feared.
The medications weren't working, at least not yet. From time to time, doctors turned off the ventilator to see if Bob could breathe on his own. He couldn't. But Pat still believed her husband was going to get better, until she got some really disturbing news.
One of the doctors came back after the rounds and said, we've decided that he has to have a tracheotomy.
Surgery to make a hole in his neck for a breathing tube. Roper says for some patients, the tube is permanent.
That's a big step. It's done all the time, but it, you know, signifies that you're in it for the long haul and things are going to get bad.
Bob had become despondent, and Pat was afraid one more setback might be too much for him and for her.
I just could not bear it. I said, please, just ask if Dr. Roper can come. If he says it's okay, I'll rest on it.
Roper understood what was going through Pat's mind.
She felt like the end was near. This meant, that he was going to be a wreck.
So he paid a visit to the Smithsons.
He came in, walked over to Bob, said, Bob, we're going to try something.
Roper knew that weeks earlier, Bob had stopped getting a medicine called Mestinon because it no longer seemed to be working. But over the years, Roper had noticed that after patients stopped taking Mestinon for a while, their bodies become more likely to respond to the medication again.
So I said, don't do the tracheostomy. Put him back on the Mestinon.
That was on a Friday. Roper told the surgeons to wait until Monday to see if Bob responded. And on Sunday, Pat says, a team came by to test her husband's lungs one more time.
When they took him off the ventilator, he breathed. He took that breath.
Bob would spend another week in intensive care and months regaining his strength. But a year after the dinner where his head began to loll, Bob and Pat had another party with the same guests.
It was the most fun, wasn't it?
Had we not had a doctor like Dr. Roper, I'm not sure where I'd be today. And Pat was always with me 100% of the time.
John Hamilton, NPR News.